Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guests on today's podcast are our family friends, Royal and Elisa Richards. We met Royal and Elisa when we moved into our current ward about 19 years ago. And as I looked around in that congregation for the first time for familiar faces, I saw Royal, who I knew from our days at the University of Utah together. And Royal and Elisa have been great friends ever since. My wife and I love them. They have been leaders in our ward. Royal has served in the bishopric as our young men's leaders and have been instrumental in helping my sons have a role model leader in their life. Likewise, Elisa has served in Young Women's and many other organizations and has blessed so many. They have three sons, Jackson, Connor, and Zeke. They will share the journey of their middle son, their fine son, Connor, coming out as gay after his LDS mission and navigating that road. Connor is now in a same-sex marriage, and they will talk through how they manage that as a family and how they're walking with Connor on this road, keeping the family circle together. They have great insights for local leaders, for all of us better knowing how to support and love families with LGBTQ members. We started with prayer. We pray that the Spirit will be here and thoughts will come into your minds as you're walking this road on how we can better support, understand, and minister to all members of the human family. So welcome to the podcast, Royal and Elisa.
Thank you.
So let's just introduce your family to our listeners. Royal or Elisa, let's have Mom introduce the family. Talk about how long you and Royal have been married and then how many kids you have.
To double check. We're into our 36th year, and we have three boys. And our oldest is Jackson. He's 29. Connor's 28, and Zeke is 23.
And where did you meet?
Connor or Royal and I met in high school, and I dated Royal's friend. And then when his friend went on a mission, Royal and I dated more seriously and got engaged.
That is great. Yeah. It's a great story. Tell us more about your kids. They're all married. We're going to talk about Connor, who's your gay son, but just kind of introduce your kids to us.
Yeah, they're all, of course I'm biased, but amazing young men. And Jackson's married, and he and his wife, Kelsey, and their daughter, Lily, live in our home while he's finishing an MD, PhD program at the University of Utah. And Connor is married, and he lives with his husband in Berlin and is pursuing graduate school. And Zeke, also at the University of Utah, working on a biology degree, working towards going to medical school as well.
Oh, that's great. When I saw your sons being raised, you just have wonderful sons, all three of them. Talk about Connor in particular. So one of the things I think it's helpful for our listeners is how you have navigated having a gay son. And I think it's helpful for our listeners to tell stories of parents that have had to walk this road and keep the family together, even if one steps out of the doctrine of our church. So talk about Connor. Introduce us to Connor and when he came out to you and how that road worked. Well, I'd let Dad do
okay,
that.
So yep. Dad will lead this one. So Connor,
tell us a little bit about him in high school.
Yeah, high school, he was athletic, played on the tennis team, was all-state tennis in his sophomore year.
That's
all
a big
three
deal.
Of our, yeah, it's a big deal. All three of our boys were excellent tennis players and played, you know, high levels. Connor was state champion at sophomore. We traveled with him as well as the other boys to Intermountain tennis tournaments. Had a lot of success, a lot of fun with tennis. So he was excelled at tennis through high school. It was really popular. Had lots of friends. Everybody loved Connor. To know Connor is to love Connor. And then he served a mission. His older brother Jackson served in Korea, and then Connor served a mission in Quito, Ecuador. They're close in age, 15 months apart, Jackson and Connor, our oldest two. He served an honorable mission, had great experiences, kind of a tough mission, had some tough experiences, including, you know, I think being robbed at gunpoint, at a hospital with a Gatorade bottle as an IV, and a few things like that. But loved his mission, had great experiences on his mission, came home, served when he was 19, came home at 21, and about a year after his mission is when he...
Not quite a year.
Not quite a year, but close to a year after his mission, he came to us and told us he was gay. And we loved him all the same and maybe even a little more.
That's a great answer. And it's interesting for me to be the host of this podcast because usually I just let the family tell their story because I don't know any of the story. But it's hard for me not to just share with our listeners, you know, my wife and I's love for all three of your sons and how wonderful, you know, academically they excelled, socially, SBO, sports. So these are just three great young men that just excelled in everything I was aware that they could do. And so it's just, you know, and I love the way you've kept your family together. How did you, some parents kind of go through these stages of just the stages to get to acceptance they have a gay son. Tell us how that worked for you. Was that, did that take a while? Was that pretty quick? Had you had anything in your family background to kind of prepare you?
Mm. We didn't have anything that prepared us, but I had actually had thought that he might be gay when he was younger, 14 or 15. And I actually asked him and he said no. And then when he came out to us after his mission, he came out. He basically came out to me, put a letter in my backpack when I was heading out of state for work. And I pulled it out and read it, and I kind of knew what it was from the, before I even actually opened it up. I knew what it was, and you know, he'd said he'd been had suicidal thoughts, and but felt like he just could no longer live without sharing that with us, and so I actually felt like I had known for a long time that he was gay, and I don't know if it's because I had that time to prepare, but the moment that I shared that with Royal, and they're always just like Royal had said, we just kind of immediately loved him more because we knew about the challenges that he was going to face. And as far as a time of it, kind of getting, I would say we accepted it immediately, but getting used to it takes time.
Yeah. That's thoughtful. Yeah. Royal, thoughts for you as you walked on this path?
Well, I think that I was not, I was obviously women are a little more savvy and intuitive.
I agree with that.
Yeah, than men are. So I was a little more surprised, but not shocked necessarily. There were never any, I guess, classic stereotypes, for lack of a better description, of, in my mind, of, you know, a super athletic kid looking, you know, friendly with the guy. I had lots of male friends, lots of girlfriends. They dated, you know, in high school and whatnot. So it wasn't quite as maybe obvious to me, maybe, or what a lack of a description, but yeah, so when he came out, it was like, wow, okay, and so now what do? I mean, we love him, we support him, we, you know, just like our other boys, and we realized it's going to be definitely a challenge for him. I remember one time that he came to us shortly after, and he sat down, I remember, in our kitchen, on our bench, exactly where we were, and tears running down his face, and he said, I'm never going to have an eternal family. And it was tough. It was a tough, tough moment for all of us because, you know, his understanding of the gospel and what he'd been raised with and what he taught his mission, he realized that this is the path that I'm going to follow. And we wanted him to be happy and we wanted him to pursue a relationship and ultimately, you know, marriage, as he got married this past February. We wanted him to be happy. And if that's what that meant, that's what we wanted him to do. So, but I think I was a little more shocked, I guess, a little more surprised, more not really shocked, really, but just a little more surprised than Elisa.
The wonderful thing was once it came out and we just decided to share it with people freely, and even, you know, my mom and dad, who, you know, I was wondering how they'd react. They're like, oh, we just love Connor so much. And Zeke was he was in high school at the time. And Zeke said, oh, Mom, Connor's the nicest guy. I don't care whether he likes a girl or a guy.
Great answers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great answers.
So it was, but it was, there's always the first time you realize he's dating and the first time you see him with another guy and the first time you see them showing affection. And those first times are a little, it's just different. There's nothing that prepares you. There's no, there's no manual for how to be to navigate that. So there's first times you just have to approach it with just love and acceptance and know that it's his first time as well.
That's very thoughtful. Talk about why LDS LGBTQ youth can be suicidal. It sounds like Condor hinted to that in the letter. Tell our listeners just a little bit about that road as you've learned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Royal highlighted it very astutely when he said that, sitting on the bench, he realized that he was not going to have, he just was so crushed that he was not going to have an eternal family. And so kind of what I would say, those hopes and dreams that you have for your children, that they'll get married, sealed, have children, that is dashed. Because for the first second, some people said, well, he can live a celibate life. And we both felt strongly from the very first second that we wanted to have him the same beautiful opportunities that we have for love and intimacy and companionship. And that he should be afforded those as well.
Royal, thoughts on that?
Same thoughts, really. It was from the church's, what he was raised with and his mission, and then basically realizing that, hey, this is a church that doesn't accept who I am, and so I'm not going to have this eternal family. I'm not going to be able to. He's never been bitter, church-wise, to this point. I think a little upset a few times and a little bit, with the policy statement, a few other things that really were troubling for all of us, mm-hmm. actually. But never been really vindictive or whatever towards the church. Never, again, spoke negatively about his mission or any of that. I think that he just realizes that that's something that he stepped aside from. He's been to church a few times with us, including this past summer when he and his husband came back and his mother-in-law actually came to church with us, which was nice. But I think that was the realization of, like, it's not going to be, our two other boys are married in the temple, and we as we are. But, you start to really see the world differently as you see, that your son is not going to be in the church, and there's going to be a different path for him.
Did Connor or either of you think or hope for a mixed orientation marriage where he'd identify as gay but find a way to make it work with a woman, or was that something that was pretty clear that just wasn't realistic?
Now, we've had experiences with people that we knew who did have that and basically essentially led double lives and didn't live their truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so
not
been good for the two families who essentially were torn apart after that. So for him, it was, we knew that we wanted him to be authentic and wanted him to live his truth.
How did you navigate this really complicated space where you recognize your son's path was outside the church and you wanted to support him in what you felt was the best path for him, but you have this doctrine you believe in? And so I think a lot of LDS parents, if they have a kid that steps away, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And they don't know, should we cut him off? Should we just sort of be okay with it? Or should we sort of come to terms that this is their path and help them make the best decision on that path possible?
Yeah.
I think part of what...
To what you said, there's no Elder's Quorum lesson or right. I'm aware of Relief Society lesson that sort of said this is how you navigate that.
Yeah, part of what's been, it's been a challenge. We've had some faith challenges ourselves, partly because of it, partly because of the, being in a church where it isn't they're not accepting per se of our son. I have several close friends, three in fact, that have gay sons, all of them, and they're varying, degrees of activity. Some of them are not active at all. Some of them are still active, and I think but I think it's difficult because it basically makes you step back and look. This is our son, and what we've grown up and been raised with, and all of the great feelings that I think I've told you this before on a couple of the walks we've gone on. Of all the great things that happened in that building across the street from our house, all those events, it hurts now. It hurts a little bit. It hurts a lot sometimes because of the pain you feel that, hey, your family's not all, all there from the standpoint of the church is concerned. So it's been a challenge for me personally. And, obviously as a family, we're trying to navigate through it.
And just, if our listeners are hearing this, somebody is being really honest and vulnerable, which you guys are great at, and you wonder, what should I do with someone that's acknowledging pain about the church or difficult things? And my experience is to sort of honor how you feel and validate how you feel versus anything else. I think we just need to honor how people feel. and create space for them to feel that way versus wanting to sort of say, well, you shouldn't feel that way here. This is what you ought to do to stop feeling that way. Because I think that just potentially separates you and makes you feel like you can't feel the way you feel and belong in a congregation.
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt like you can still, even though there's some things that, as Royal said, I mean, every single day there is pain associated with him not being accepted fully in our church. Every single day there's pain associated with that. Yet there's still a lot of joy that we derive from the church as well. And so can we, you know, can we kind of straddle that and just like you said, honor that it is painful, and but still honor that there are many wonderful blessings that still come from the church as well.
So it's complicated, gray, ambiguous space.
Very.
It is very complicated.
And just so our listeners know, Royal and Elisa hold callings in our ward, and you do a great job. And Royal, I guess I know Royal a little bit better because I've just seen his role with our sons. You're the great peacemaker, the great motivator, the great coach. You've been in some high emotionally charged areas where only some of those men are going to listen to you as you quiet them down. And Elisa's been the same way with young women's. And as you've served together, you've blessed our family and so many families' lives. And so sometimes I think about couples like you that are walking this road. It's sort of like, what can we do to sort of bless your life now that you've given so much and blessed so many people's lives? Maybe let's talk about that. So let's say there's local leaders here, or other members of the church that want to do the, they want to kind of help parents of gay kids that now feel like, wait a second, this doesn't quite work for me. Still trying to hang in there with the church, but I've got a kid whose path is outside the church, and that's hard, just as you're articulating. What would you say, what are helpful things that local leaders or local members can do?
I think that there's, I mean, even Connor's path outside the church is because of because he's gay and he's married, but there's lots of kids who live outside the church, but the bottom line is we still love them, and I think all the things that drew them to us before they left the church, their personalities, their struggles, their joys, they're still the same. They're still the same kids. And we need to find a way to still connect. And that's one thing is there have been certain people within the ward or stake family who are still, you know, they ask about how's Connor doing? How are Connor and Jan? And some people who I think once kind of they knew he was gay and living a gay lifestyle, they just almost like he disappeared.
Yeah. I think the same thing is like, obviously you are a friend of ours and you happen to be in our ward. And so we can have these conversations and you know where our heart is and the struggles we've gone through. But I think, you know, we've lived in this ward for 25 years.
That's a long time.
A long time. And we know
you must have been 17 when you moved in.
Yeah, 15. Yeah, that's it.
You were married, were sophomores when you got married.
Yeah, sophomores in high school.
But I think, you know, and so we know a lot of people, and we are, our social life has not necessarily been derived with relationships in the ward. You know, we're close to family, and you're raising kids. You're raising kids, and you're doing things with family. But socially, you know, some people are really close to people in their ward. And I'd say we're close to, generally close, but we don't like socialize a lot with people in our ward. But I feel like outside of you and a few others, some of our former elders quorum before the elders quorum was changed, because I used to attend elders quorum because Jackson, as you know, my son is in the ward, and I'd go to elders quorum. I've been a high priest since 2004, but I felt more comfortable in elders quorum because I felt like the dialogue and the discussions we had in there were, these kinds of topics could be spoken about, and we did, and there were some real tender moments, myself included and Jackson, of discussing the heartache and some of the challenges and struggles we'd had. But I don't think there's a, like Elisa said, there's a lot of people that don't really reach out honestly, like, how are you guys really doing?
Well, that's the minority, because the majority are the people who, the thing about it is they love Connor, they love our family, and they're the ones that hosted a shower for him.
True.
So those people came through with flying colors. There, I would almost say it's a little bit generational what we've experienced, that some of the older maybe ward members are the ones that have really not been interested in asking about him, or which you know, I mean, do
you think they don't know what to say, or do you think they just feel like it's something you don't want to talk about?
Both. I mean, you know.
And if there's older members or just generational members that are listening and say, I would actually like to say the right thing, what would be some good questions they could ask you?
That's a good thing to say. I mean, part of literally just asking how is your son or daughter? How is Connor doing? How is he? How's he doing? Is he living in the United States? Is he living? I heard he got married. Is he, you know, what really just an interest in his well-being is all people need to say.
Well,
just,
and how are we doing genuinely? And, you know, how are you guys doing? Kind of thing a little bit, but mostly
that's an open-ended question, Ro. That's not a yes or no answer. I like that question.
It's not, because then it gives you an opportunity to kind of tell people what's going on. And, you know, when this was all happening, I was still executive secretary in the bishopric and, you know, serving a lot of callings that way. And I had some discussions with some of the men I was serving with, but I think that's probably, like Elisa said, maybe just genuinely, how is Connor and how are you guys?
I had a conversation with a friend not that long ago, and I was just mentioning that I feel like, you know, our friends and people who know Connor, and I feel in some ways that maybe, you know, Connor is a really, to know Connor is to love Connor, because he's a very kind, gentle soul. And so many people have been so giving and generous through his wedding shower, his ward wedding shower. And I think part of it too is we've found that a lot of people within the church have been very, you know, open and loving and kind. It's really most people have been kind about it with our church. There's been some that just don't really reach out. But I do think that, you know, I just think it's the people that reach out, and they're the ones that have the soft hearts. And so I have to kind of separate people from doctrine a little bit,
mm-hmm.
or people from policy,
mm-hmm.
because when you do that, it's been able to allow people to really simply love him, despite the fact that he's gay and basically living in a gay marriage.
And this relationship with Jan happened pretty quickly. I mean, you met Jan basically the summer of 2017, summer 2017, through mutual friend. Jan is from Berlin, and that's where they live now, is Berlin. And so they met here through mutual friend, and then one thing led to another, and then Connor moved in January to Berlin, and they were married February 9th. We went over for the wedding. A couple of family members made it. His brothers weren't able to go because they're in the middle of school, and
mm-hmm.
that was sad. They couldn't be there, but then we had a big party, and you know, obviously the ward shower, and then wedding celebration here. A lot of the friends that weren't able to go, and they had a lot of support
from the ward members, state ward members, family.
That was a very nice event, and so they got an opportunity to be that part of it. But it did happen pretty quickly, and I think that caught some people off guard, is because the next thing a lot of people knew is Connor's married and living in Berlin. Like, what? You know, they didn't. It was kind of fast even for us, but it was a nice event this summer.
One of the things I talk to parents of LGBTQ kids, I think it's an okay thing to learn the core hopes of your LGBTQ child, even if those core hopes are scary for you. And so I think some parents of LGBTQ kids may not want to hear their hopes, because their hopes may be outside of the circle of our doctrine. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you were able to kind of figure out Connor's hopes pretty quickly. Do you want to talk about all that? Was there a time when he came out you kind of didn't want to sort of know where he felt his path was?
I don't think so. I think from the beginning we wanted him to be happy, whatever that meant. And that meant a relationship and ultimately a marriage. And we were hoping he would have a long-term relationship and be married. And then family and whatever that all involves. I think that's never really crossed my mind too much of, like, I think it's just first and foremost his happiness. Just like all three of our boys. I want all three of them to be happy, and whatever that means for Jackson and Kelsey and Zeke and Sarah and Connor and Jan is whatever the happiness is for them. And if Connor's happy living in Berlin and working hard to learn the German language so he can go to graduate school, he graduated from the University of Utah a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, whenever that was. And so it's just, it doesn't really, I mean, it's different than what we kind of expected, like we've discussed, but it's mostly, for me, it was, we just wanted to be happy. And whatever that happiness is, we support it. We support it.
And that kind of happened from the very first. I had a friend who said, well, you know, you should get him to some therapy. And I don't know, Royal and I felt like immediately.
What was the therapy? Did you know what the therapy was going to do?
She felt like getting some therapy so he can live a celibate life, so that he could remain a strong, full, fledged member of the church. And from that, from the very beginning, we immediately said we wanted him to experience love, companionship, intimacy, just like we did. So that wasn't hard to navigate, I guess.
How do you navigate when someone would say, well, I can get where you hope that, but what about his eternal salvation? Aren't you worried about his eternal salvation? Or do you just leave that at the Savior's feet and extend the circle of love? How do you, or do you even get people saying, well, you've kind of you've sold out here and you haven't stood for your values here?
My
how do you navigate
is
that?
I think it's hard to navigate. It's hard to understand. And I think in the broad scheme of you know, life and the eternities, it is up to the Savior. It is, you know, if I mean, Connor is so loving and such a good person that I can't imagine not being where he is in the eternities. And I think we've talked about, Elise and I, the same thing. We're not sure how that's going to all be reconciled, but we think that somehow it has to be.
Yeah. We believe that. I believe that. I think that, just like you said, that it will, in many ways, Connor lives a much more Christ-like life than many other people. Yet the one thing that I do feel like, I think that we just can't, I don't think we can judge, because who knows? I think sometimes our LGBTQ kids are sent here to teach us that there's not always one path. Sometimes there's...
Talk about some of the things Connor has taught you two and your family and all of us.
One thing he's taught me and opened my mind, two specific things. One is to love no matter what. I feel like I have the capacity to love and be more tolerant and respectful of people who are in other religions, in, you know, whether they're, you know, same gender relationships, or it doesn't even really matter. Just basically love people who are really different than me. I've been able to do that. That's one. And another is that I feel like I look back on some of the things that I did, and I'm kind of ashamed at some of the things I thought before, because maybe I was one of those people that thought, oh, I can't believe, you know, they're not behaving this way, or they're not doing this way. And now I feel like I just have to really take a step back. That's not my place to judge. It's only my place to love.
That's beautiful. Royal, anything comes to your mind?
I think the same thing is, Connor's always been so loving and such a considerate person. I mean, there's no doubt he's the peacemaker of the family. And so I think that he's taught us all to be definitely more loving. I mean, even as before he came out, to be more loving. He never liked conflict. He was always, like I say, the peacemaker. But I think that, like Elisa said, he's taught us to be much more understanding and accepting of people who are different than us, who believe different, who think different, who act different.
And who look different.
Look different. And just to look for the good in all people. And I know that one of, you know, Connor likes to talk about the Savior and how the Savior, what would the Savior do? The Savior loved everyone and accepted everyone. And, you know, I think that he's taught us to be more like that, more like the Savior, to love everyone, to accept everyone, even if they are different than us or if they think differently than we do. Whereas before, maybe we were a little more closed-minded. Oh, they're not like we are, so we can't associate with them, or I mean, we weren't like that, but just, and it's an example of, you know, he's definitely opened our minds to love more.
You know, and for our listeners, this is just, you're describing a, reality of my wife and I, as we've watched Connor grow up, I think I've teased you. We wanted our daughter to marry your son, yes. Connor.
We wanted that too, because and we love your
That was kids. Kind of our yes. family dream. But, you know, God had a different plan, and mm-hmm. both of those two kids are now married and living great lives and still friends.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I noticed, and I was just kind of coming into the space while you, Connor was coming out, and didn't have much experience. But I've noticed different parents sort of managing this process. If a young man or a young woman or a transgender child is stepping away, what is their role in that process? And one of the things I noticed is that, and I think one of the things I feel is that if parents sort of cut their kids off, their kids are less likely to make thoughtful decisions. Versus if you continue to have the circle of the family around your LGBTQ child, I think they're going to make better decisions. So I noticed that in some of Connor's prior relationships, you included that boyfriend in family trips and family events, and you immediately extended the circle of the family. And I assume that raised some eyebrows, you know,
yeah.
as you had family trips and stuff. And but it seems like that kept Connor on a path where he felt your love to make a thoughtful decision to find a partner versus other roads he could explore. Any thoughts on that?
Part of it is your family is your haven. So if you can't experience that, you know, with your family, then that's, I think that's very disappointing, and that it can lead to suicide. If you know, those sorts of thoughts, if they can't feel like they can experience that within the, either the approval or even the invitation and love of the family. And our kids, I think that his siblings, there was maybe a little bit of hesitation very initially from Jackson, but quickly I think he got over that. And
of inviting Connor's boyfriends on family trips,
a little
or family
bit.
Baby.
I mean, at first they're like, "Oh, wow, how's
That's
this
different.
Gonna work out?"
Right.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, and just like I said, it was a first for us. But we felt like we wanted him to know that that he could still talk to us. He could bring his dates and his boyfriends around. We still wanted to have an influence, or at least some measure of influence, on who he selected as his companions, because this was our son, just the same way as if it were a girl he were, you know, dating as well.
And we tried to originally as well, we said, you know, you're going to have the same standards dating as if it's a girl, you know, no staying overnight and whatever, and those kinds of things. And so, you know, we kind of supported that plan from the start of, hey, if you're living in our home, that we probably have certain rules. And, you know, I think he respected those rules. But back to the acceptance part, it's hard to believe that, you know, you think about unconditional love, and that's what you have, this unconditional love for your kids. And unless, I can't imagine anything that they could ever do that would make me not love any of them. And so this was just something different that we navigated and are navigating through with Connor. But there was never ever in our minds like, well, let's kick him out, or we can't have him around. We can't have him around Zeke, who's, you know, 5 years younger than him, or any of those thoughts never went through our mind, because you love your kids. And so that was easy, and is never. And you think of, you hear these stories of these families who disown their kids or kick them out or whatever, and your heart just breaks for them, because, you know, it's a tough road no matter what. I mean, it's going to be a tough road, because there are those people out there that won't be accepting and not kind. And so, you know, we knew that, like I said earlier, if anything, you give them that extra measure of love in your home.
You include them more, you look out yes. for them more, because life is harder for them. Acceptance is harder.
I love that. I think one of the core doctrines that I believe in is the doctrine of the family, and mm-hmm. keeping our families together and keeping the circle of the family together. And so to me, from a principal standpoint or doctrinal standpoint, you're not out of bounds. You're not doing anything that God wouldn't himself do. Royal, you said our love is unconditional. I believe God loves all of his children and is there for all of them, and wants them all to be in the circle of his love and his influence as he stays and we stay connected. So I think some would judge parents of LGBTQ kids that support their kids, whatever that word means, and say, well, you should cut them off, or you're not standing for the truths of the church. But I would say the principle of keeping your family together is the greatest, is the greatest doctrinal principle in our church, and you are following that. And then I think you all, you have a beautiful family. And so that's just my thoughts. And then anything else to add?
No, I just think the same thing. I think you almost have to work harder because they are, they're still trying to navigate it as well. So, I mean, you're, these are new experiences for your child, new experiences for you. I think you need to have that extra measure of love. And, you know, Royal and I have been married, you know, 36 years plus, and all of those years, the family's been the core of what we believe and what we live. And just because Connor was gay didn't change that.
Did you two think you made Connor gay at any point?
No, initially, no. But there's one, you know, at some point you think. And
if any parents thought that, what would you say?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the parents who think that, yeah, let's send them to therapy, they can change, or it's a decision that they've made, and this is, it's a trendy thing. It's in our mind, it clearly is not. It's the way they were born, and it's something that, you know, takes different times for people to come out and or manifest itself or whatever it is. And I think Connor knew all along, or from his early teen years, like Elisa said, she seemed to have an idea. I didn't, but that, you know, served his mission. I think that that was as much, that was clearly as much for us and maybe the family as it was. I don't think it was for himself. I think he at that point knew. And I think that's one of the greatest things he's ever done.
That's
honestly
cool.
To serve an honorable mission.
That's cool.
And come back and then realize, okay, this is who I am and I need to face up to it now. I think he was advised by some leaders that if, you know, if he did certain things, then maybe those tendencies wouldn't manifest, and they did ultimately. And so I think he came back and said, okay, I've done all these things my whole life right to try and maybe change or have it go away or whatever the terminology is, and came back from his mission, and it's time to say, okay, this is who I am. And then it was like, okay, well, we support you. I love you. So I think it was,
if God created him that way, it's our, I feel like it's our mission to honor that and basically love him just as we love our other kids or more, as we've indicated. But I also think that, I think Connor knew, and he even told me that he knew when he was quite younger than his teenage years, that he felt had some same sex attraction.
And yeah, not more than our other kids, but maybe just a little more for him. I mean, we love them all, of course.
I'm just saying.
I know. It sounds like you love them more than the other kids.
But sometimes I think part of it is it's different navigating a little bit with a child who's gay, just because, again, like I said, they're first. A lot of these experiences, you just have never prepared for it.
Yeah, I certainly feel the same way, that God doesn't make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And the way everybody's created is the way God wanted everybody to be created. And I think the science is helping us understand how God accomplished this goal of creating diversity. And there's beauty in diversity. And so I love that. I don't think God wants anybody to feel shame for how mm-hmm. they're created.
No.
And I think you two picked up on that really quickly. And I think that's helped for his emotional health and his spiritual health and his life mission. Back to Elders Quorum, Royal, because I came back from my YSA assignment. We're both high priests, but maybe it's because I'd hung around the YSAs. I just felt a need to connect in the Elders Quorum, and you were there. You're mm-hmm. my age. And there were some really beautiful moments. Do you remember the Sunday where we used to have a good news moment?
Mm-hmm.
And people would share their good news moment.
Yes, I remember.
And it was your, and you volunteered, or you were asked, tell us your good news moment that you shared in Elders Quorum.
I'm pretty sure the good news moment was that Connor had been, got married and met someone that he loved and was married in Berlin, and how much we loved him and supported him. And it was easy to share it in that group.
And do you remember the responses?
Response was all, it seemed all very positive and supportive. There's so much love in that, you know, group of maybe 10, 12, 15 of us. It was wonderful.
You know, now I've got tears in my eyes because I just think that was an example for all parents of LGBT kids to do what you did. And I'm sure you did the same thing, Elisa, in these moments where, instead of being embarrassed about Connor or somehow hiding this or being ashamed to have a gay son. You're a big sports guy, Royal.
Yeah,
you're one of the best athletes I know. We could have a whole podcast about your sports accomplishments.
No, it wouldn't be that long.
We could talk about your double eagle.
Okay.
But here are you, you know, proud of your son and sharing this good new moment in Elders Quorum. It was one of the most beautiful moments I've ever seen in a quorum. And it just taught me how much you love Connor because you love sharing that with your fellow brothers. And I love some of the questions. I love that some people asked his husband's name.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked what he was studying. And they asked how they met. And they were genuinely interested. And I thought that there was, all of that to me is consistent with the gospel of Jesus Christ, to be loving and interested and ask the right questions. And yeah. Some use the husband. Some may have said partner, and I think it's appropriate to say husband.
Sure. And I felt one other thing that I felt about that is I felt that it was genuine love. It wasn't because they felt like I needed to be reached out to or supported or whatever. It was genuine love that was just that I felt. Well, there was no ulterior motive of anyone like, hey, we need to make sure we keep him coming to Elders Quorum or anything along those lines. I never felt, ever thought that for a moment. It was just love and support. And it was probably the best moment I think I've ever had. And maybe, you know, aside from the baptisms in that ward, but you know, maybe of my boys, but maybe even as much for sure.
Did it make you want to come back to Elders Quorum?
I did.
Did you feel more connection there?
I felt definitely connected. I felt like, you know, because we had several discussions about that and challenges people were having and struggles people were having. And so it made it very easy to go back to Elders Quorum.
Yeah, I love that Elders Quorum. And I know that same Elders Quorum guy that's now our Elders Quorum president wants to have those same discussions, mm-hmm. but it's a bigger quorum
mm-hmm.
and harder to do. But I think there's just beauty in what happened in that Elders Quorum that I think for local leaders or parents that we need to have authentic conversations because that creates better connection versus I call it sometimes the best answer club where a quorum mm-hmm. is for the 20% that have the best answer and they kind of shine and the 80% that want to ask a question or be vulnerable just don't feel any space. But you led by example there and I think you helped change the culture of that quorum because then I think more people, I don't know if anybody else had a gay kid in the quorum, but people had other sort of real life things they wanted
sure.
to talk about. And then they felt safe because you were open and honest. And then we all kind of met everybody where they were and helped us move forward. Any thoughts on that, Lisa? I don't know if you had any chances to have an experience like that. And any, I know you're in Young Women's now.
I haven't felt that many, although when Connor was engaged and then he was married, I can't tell you how many people wanted to have the war shower for him, which really warmed my heart because I thought this is going to be interesting to see. And so many, probably 5 or 6 different women, including your dear wife, offered to have a shower. And
did that surprise you that people wanted to have a shower? Did you kind of know that some would?
On one hand, it surprised me a little bit because I thought, man, they're going out of limb because I don't think we've ever had a gay ward shower before. And on the other hand, they love Connor, so it didn't surprise me at all, and then yet it did. So, and the love that was there that night, we had a lot of the women came, and Connor and his husband Jan were there, and then also Jan's mother Ingeborg was there as well. And
she came all the way from Germany.
Yeah, she mm-hmm. came from Berlin, and you know, I think it was a wonderful experience for her to meet everybody. And there was a tender, really tender moment where Jan and Connor shared kind of their love story, and they shared how they met and how they fell in love and the support that they feel in the war. It was very tender. Many of the husbands came kind of towards the end. And there were just a lot of tears and just very heartfelt, you know, sincere love and, you know, love for these two people who found each other from two different continents. And it was a nice thing to share with our ward family.
And I think our Ward Release Society president was the person that put on that shower. And I thought, I don't know if she did that as officially as a Ward Release Society president, or is your friend, or maybe it doesn't matter.
I don't think she cared.
I don't think she cared.
I think all of that was. Yeah, she's always been, you know, asking how I'm doing all through all of, you know, Connor coming out, Connor, you know, getting engaged and married, and she's always been super supportive.
And I love that some of the men came at the end of that shower, and I noticed that our bishop was there and our stake president was there, and I think they were both coming from other church responsibilities, and I thought that was beautiful. I'm aware of there's lots of stories of local priesthood leaders supporting in this space.
And I think Connor was wanting to have some of those. I mean, that was by design, to have several of those men invited to come because they were influential on him growing up, yourself included, and others. And so they didn't just come to be with their wives at the end. They came because they were invited and they supported Connor, and it was really tender. It was really nice.
And I love your tributes. You know, you both spoke at this shower, and you both did a great job. And I just sort of imagine what this felt like for Jan and Connor to be there, you know, on this road. I kind of come back to the circle of the doctrine of our church and the circle of our family, which is broader, and just the love that everybody had, and your love for these, you know, this couple as they're moving forward the best way they know how. I want to come back to another church experience that I thought was really helpful. We were going through Elder Oaks' talk about the proclamation of family in Elders Quorum one day, Royal, and I can't remember if that was before or after, and I believe in the doctrine of the proclamation of the family, but your son Jackson just opened up a little bit about how that talk was hard for your family in a very thoughtful, faithful way that I thought was really well done. Do you want to share with our listeners that meeting and then some of your thoughts following?
Yeah, I think it was, I mean, a lot of people know about the talk and the proclamation, and basically, you know, you're either, I mean, not exactly this, but you're either in or you're out and you're following the doctrine or you're not. And it was kind of hard because it felt like it was just, you know, as you go into a general conference, you're hoping, you know, as parents of LGBTQ children, you're hoping for something. You're hoping for something tender and accepting, and it seemed like it was a little bit the other direction for us, at least for our family. And so it was, and then Jackson was the one that brought it up. I think we were talking about conference talks at the time, and he brought that one up and basically said that one was painful for us. I think people were talking about their, you know, some of the conference talks, and he basically, and Jackson's very eloquent, and he actually was maybe going to come tonight, but he had a soccer game he's playing in, but. So he described kind of the same kind of feelings we all felt as a family, like this hurts because it's just we want to have a general authority be more accepting and more than basically saying, okay, this is the way it is and you're either in or you're out. And so it was tough. We had some great dialogue and discussion, and there were several people who had the same kind of feeling in the Elders Quorum, but it was some very good dialogue because it was something we all talked about as a family that hurt.
Did that connect you more with the church and more with the Quorum or make it harder for you?
Well, the talk made it harder, but talking about it made it easier, knowing that there's always that support. And again, it's like Elise says, it's a little bit of a generational thing, and I think that's why both of us went there, is you felt connected as well. And I always felt like I have a big kid that's never grown up. And so my joke was I was still in the bishopric, I think, the executive secretary, and teasing them that the bishop sent me to spy on the elders, and that's why I was there. But then I got released and I had no excuse anymore, but everyone knew I was there because, you know, Jackson was there and I wanted to be with my son. But so it made it definitely easier to talk about it. It's the hurt was still there from a general authority, but it helped to have some dialogue.
It was a fascinating moment, and I wanted to not say anything to kind of see how that moment would play out, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So I thought Jackson, as you said, was very courageous in a very unemotional, I'm probably more emotional. Jackson was very analytical. It wasn't a polarizing comment. Not many people can do that. He just was factual and say, this talk was hard for our family. Mm-hmm. And I thought, then he stopped talking. I thought, wow, that's out there now. Someone just said a general conference talk was uncomfortable for them. And I thought the Quorum handled that beautifully. there was no shaming. There was no, well, you ought to reread it, or you ought to pray, or you ought to be rethinking that, or the wheat and the chaff. I mean, some of the shaming comments that would have forever shut Jackson down and anybody else that had a concern, I thought the quorum did a really good job, and I thought your comments were very open. Now, I don't think everybody needed to agree.
No.
It's not like everybody needed to see it the same way you and Jackson did or I did. I think it was just we validated how you felt, and we honored that you brought that up in core meeting as we're all just trying to figure this out. And you can be a faithful Mormon and be concerned with have a conference talk that doesn't resonate with you. I've never read anything where...
Yeah, that's one of those times of vulnerability that I felt back then. And there were a lot of tears shed in a lot of different circumstances in that quorum in a short few months, it seemed like. There was a lot of great lessons, tender lessons, and the discussions like that where there was a lot of emotion. And I think that it's not that I don't feel that in the new elders quorum, but I'm kind of quiet in there at the moment, as you probably noticed, that I don't have a lot to say because I know everyone again,
yeah.
But I don't quite feel that as comfortable, but that was a great, opportunity to share a lot of things that are on a lot of people's minds and a lot of good moments in that elder quorum.
So let's say if you're a local leader and want to duplicate what happened in elders quorum, and maybe that's happened in, you've been in Young Women's so long, you probably don't get a chance.
No, we don't really,
there's not really
an opportunity.
A forum. If you're in Relief Society.
And I've even the times I have been to Relief Society, I think you guys are really fortunate. I'm not sure if it's, I kept thinking, what's the recipe that's creating this opportunity for you to share your feelings in a loving and respectful and open way in the church? And I haven't experienced that. So.
What would you say to a Relief Society president or an elders quorum president or a bishop that recognizes that he or she wants to have a safe space for members to be open and honest? What could they do to create that environment? Any thoughts come to mind?
I mean, part of it is they could have us either talk about our children in some way, if it's connected to the lesson in some manner, that's a way to at least talk. You really have to get on the topic. And I think part of it is, I think it's generational again for the Relief Society aspect. I'm not really sure because many of those Relief Society lovely women are the ones that hosted the shower.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think it would be accepted. I just hasn't ever been really tested yet, at least in my personal experience.
And I know one thing that's interesting church-wise, a comment that our oldest daughter-in-law has made is back when there was elders quorum and high priests, Jackson's wife being in her, mid-20s, late-20s now, they're both 29. She was always, a little bit jealous of Jackson because you get to go and be with elders who are more your age. I have to go to Relief Society with, I don't know many people, and there's a lot of older people in there too. Kind of like our situation now with the elders quorum, the elders quorum with the elder high priest. So I think that there was wasn't really an opportunity for, she didn't feel like there was a place for her, that she felt comfortable. And I thought that was an interesting take because I never really thought of that as a guy.
So she doesn't go. She goes.
She doesn't
takes
go.
Her little girl to nursery.
Interesting.
Yeah.
She never really felt. And I think, that part of that is, and it is a little bit of an age barrier because a lot of the women, women her age are in either the nursery or the primary or young women. So that, I think that it's, but I do think that there is, that can be, that sort of feeling could be duplicated with people who are open despite their age. It just is it's really a matter of kind of creating that environment.
And I'm not saying that it can't ever happen again in our eldest quorum in our ward, but as you know, you've been in both of them with me in there, the old elders quorum, the more intimate group, and now the new elders quorum. And President Nelson is doing a great job. There couldn't be anyone that could bring a group of older and younger men together. But it's, for me, it's, I'm not so sure I'll ever have that feeling of openness and vulnerability again that I had in that quorum. And that was really important for me.
Yeah. And I've needed that too.
Yeah.
And I walk with you on that road, and And we do have a really good Elders Quorum president who's a younger guy than both of us. And he's a great bridge builder between the two groups. And I think it's just a, I think it's a great ward council question. If you're a local leader,
how do you
create a culture where, you know, the people that need to be vulnerable and turn to their faith community to process things can, and not feel judged or lesser or, you know, whatever these phrases we use, the elect will be deceived in the last days for opening up. It's risky to open up.
Yeah.
And it, vulnerable is exactly the right word. And so how do you create a culture? And I think it comes from the leadership. And I think it's creating a, having talks or training and saying, we're going to create a safe space here. And we want, if someone asks an honest question, we don't want you to give just a quick answer. We want you to validate their question, tell them they're really courageous for asking that question. Even if you may not agree with their concern, they need to be able to process their concerns in the walls of our church. Because as we all know, there's people out of the church that will process all these concerns. And then we build community with people that have left, thinking, well, that's my home. They'll at least talk about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So any more thoughts on that?
Well, I wish that I could, you know, and it was the kind of the topic a couple of times where I actually was able to open up. I wish that I felt comfortable enough, because I like a lot of those older elders, including my peers, because I'm 58. So that older group and maybe some of the older high priests to kind of know where I'm at, because I don't think many of them have really a clue where I'm at. The younger ones do, because they've heard me talk about it. But that's the way I would somehow hope. And I'm just, again, President Nelson is creating the best opportunity, but I just don't feel comfortable to open up in that.
And that would
setting.
Be a little bit of some of your concerns with the church and
yeah, sure. Just
and just some of that, those, be able to talk about
right,
that.
Right.
Maybe
because you have a group, you have many, many, you know, former mission presidents and general authorities and people in there that are like, you know, you just don't want to, you don't know what they're going to say or how they're going to react.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Elisa?
Well, maybe President Nelson is really thoughtful. And I mean, to me, perhaps a good thoughtful leader, whether they're in the Relief Society or the Elders Quorum, they might invite you to, if somebody giving a lesson, they might invite you to share a part of, you know, part of your experience in a safe way. I mean, you have to be kind of be invited. If you don't feel in, you're in a place that's safe and, you know, you're a little bit nervous to do it, mm-hmm. maybe you need to be invited to do it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. If I were an Elders Quorum president, I'd be, you know, wanting to figure out how do I do this. And
right. I mean, do you invite them to, I mean, if there's a specific lesson, because even that's a good, the proclamation for family is really good, because maybe that's an opportunity to say, well, I have a non-traditional family. And there's still, you know, so there's some things that I still have to navigate between kind of my family and the proclamation of the family. And why is that? Well, because my son's gay, he's married, you know, and that invites you to at least share about your experiences. And it is hard, and you don't want to be judged, and you don't want to have shameful comments, or that's why probably why you're not sharing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think of if I were to maybe have a conversation in my Elders Quorum or a fifth Sunday, I'd probably start with church resources. If we ought to talk LGBTQ, I'd probably show the Macintosh video. That's an official video from the church that is somewhat similar to your story. You know, two active LDS parents that have a gay son that I think their story took longer to get to the point he wasn't going to marry a woman and he was starting to date men, and that's not exactly the plan, but they just left at the Savior's feet, because I think... I think that provides a framework to have a discussion, because I know in our Elders Quorum there are, you know, men there that have children that have stepped away and they don't quite know how to navigate this. We don't ever talk about what principles apply now and how do we handle these kids that have stepped away, not necessarily in a gay marriage, but just stepped away from the faith. And I know there's a lot of pain, maybe not for you because I think you're really at peace, but I think there's pain and wondering how this worked for their eternal family. And I wish we could be more vulnerable and kind of share some of that. And how do we navigate that? And how do we sort of, you know, talk about this so we can kind of help everybody?
Yeah, whether they've stepped away because they're leaving, you know, he's in a, he's married, in a gay marriage, or whether they've stepped away for whatever reason, they're still our children. And I think all of the same principles that God and the Savior want us to have with our families, they're still there. Nothing changes.
Yeah. And I call it sad heaven. I think sad heaven is where we mourn right now. It's like me mourning the Dodgers losing in Game 7 of the World Series right now and feeling all that emotional pain and having played.
Well, heaven's going to be so much fun.
I think sad heaven is when we all mourn right now that we have empty chairs around the table and our eternal family is not intact. And I don't think God wants us to do that. I don't think you're doing that. You're just saying, the thing I can control is keep my family together and keep the family circle of love together. And you're doing a great job of that. And then you're just leaving at the Savior's feet and saying, I have faith somehow my eternal family can be together. Yeah. I'm not mourning, you know, empty chairs.
Yeah, I believe God created Connor that way and all our fine LGBTQ kids and that it's going to be wonderful. And I think that they're not just their lifestyle, but a lot of other people who are different, they're here to teach us and to teach us love and acceptance. I mean, they are a gift to us to be able to think differently,
one
and
thing
love
that
differently.
Was very enlightening this past summer, as I think you know, but the listeners might be interested to hear, is Connor, you know, again, we talked about his tennis. He entered the gay games. They have a gay Olympic games every 4 years.
That's cool.
For gay athletes. And it was in Paris this year. And I'd never been to Paris, at least I hadn't been since she was a kid. It was the 1st of August. And we thought, this is a lifetime opportunity. Our son's in the Olympics.
Wow.
And so we went to Paris. He actually was matched up with someone from Australia of his ability level. Didn't know who he was going to be playing with. Played doubles. He played doubles and singles. And one thing I mean, more importantly than their results, because they did great. They won a bronze medal in doubles. There's like 10,000, over 10,000 athletes. There were nearly 1,000 in tennis alone. But one thing that was very enlightening was the love and kindness of that group of people.
More That's than cool. I've ever seen. They would they would hit a shot and or even win the match and then run over and give their opponent a big hug.
They would hug and have pictures taken together.
Take your picture with me. And it was amazing.
And it was a great example of love. It's like how kind these people really are. You know, and again, you know, being athletics, I've been in my whole life and professional athlete brothers and all these things and all the competition. And you have to, you know, go out and just hammer your opponent and walk off and taunt them off the field. Like our athletes
trash
these days, it seems like
stuff.
Trash talk, but It was wonderful. I mean, to see it all the way through and the love and kindness was something that everyone should have been a part of, to see that. And that's one thing I learned more than anything was the kindness and the love in that group of people. And it was a lot of them, 10,000. They had opening ceremonies in the stadium and they all paraded in by country. And it was really great to be a part of. So we were grateful that we went, loved it. Connor loved it. And they had a great time.
We need something like this. And I love where you went firsthand and saw not only your own son participate at this top international level, but saw the beauty of the whole experience. And what can we learn? One of the things that, you know this, is that I sometimes ask the question now, not how am I supposed to lift an LGBTQ person, but what can they teach me about the gospel of Jesus Christ to become a better disciple of Christ? And that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
So, but we love you, President Nelson, if you're listening. He listens to some of these podcasts, and you are doing a great job. And Royal and I appreciate all you've done. I know he spent some time with me as I was coming back to the ward and kind of getting integrated in the ward. And we do have wonderful ward members that are doing the best they can. But I think some of the structural things you show are not anybody's intent to not. We just need to kind of figure out how to move to the next level.
Sure.
And so that we can, because I look at, you know, people like you that need to be able to talk about real things, same with me at church, and find community there. And I love these two examples where you did talk about the difficult things. And then I remember asking you, did that connect you more with the church or potentially drive any wedge you have with the church deeper? And you told me, no, it connected me more with the church to be able to share how I felt and have those responses. And I think that's a great principle for a local leader to say, if I'm trying to keep my flock together, you know, here's an example of letting them being honest and vulnerable and honoring how they feel and how it connected you.
Yeah. A good friend of ours, Boyd, you know.
Yeah.
His saying is, and I think of it a lot when I'm in certain settings, and Elder's Corner would be a perfect example of it, is everyone has their own bag of rocks. And it'd be nice to be able to unload that bag of rocks one by one in that setting.
Whether it's your gay child or addiction or divorce, right, or whatever your challenges
struggling
are.
Struggling children, struggling marriage, struggling just anything that, you know, because you look around and you know everyone's got a challenge.
Yeah.
And not everyone is just sitting there with the perfect testimony and the perfect understanding and they have it all figured out. I don't know that hardly anyone has that. So I just think of, you know, if there's just a way to unload that bag of rocks somewhere in that setting, because we were able to do it in the old Elders Quorum.
Yeah.
And that's as much on me as it is on anyone, because again, you know, President Nelson is amazing at bringing the group together.
And he was vulnerable at times.
Sure.
We know that he's an incredibly strong member of the church, yeah, very faithful, but he at times was open a little bit. And I think he wasn't our Elders Quorum president, but he set a tone there that created space for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You've done a great job of kind of answering this question already, but if there's parents listening that have LGBTQ kids or suspect they have LGBTQ kids or even planning ahead that this could be a possibility, what advice, let's start with Elisa, especially if you don't, maybe if you just have little kids and you think this could be my road, what could I do now to sort of prepare my family or prepare my kids for this?
Well, I think you have to pray for some help.
Good answer.
And that always helps for strength. And I one thing that I'm super grateful for is, first of all, my marriage is really strong and Royal and I have been on the same page from day one. And that has been huge. I think, and if you're dealing with a couple that has really different, coming from different positions, it's hard. I think part of it is just acceptance is grounded in love. So and even you might be a little bit different places at different times, but I think in the end, if you can just let the love of the child supersede anything, and know that you are, if you do have a gay child, that it is, you are going to have uncomfortable times the first time. Again, like I mentioned, the first time they date, the first time they, have a boyfriend, or, you know, the first time he had a serious boyfriend or was engaged, it was all new. You know, seeing your son kiss another man is all new. And it can be kind of raw. And so if you don't have that in your spouse, you've got to find it in a friend or something. You've got to have somebody. And I belong to, different friends do that for me. It's interesting because I wouldn't call myself super active in some circles, but I'm very active with my own small circles.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I would say you need to have some support. You need to, if you can do it with your spouse, that's great. If not, you need some support if you can find somebody. And then I would say that, again, the bottom line is you want your child to be happy, safe and happy. So I think that's...
I love that. I was thinking as you were talking that sometimes our parent dreams have to change. Mm-hmm. We have to sort of honor our kids' dreams. But then at the end of that, I thought, well, both of your dreams are being realized because the family circle is together and the family love is together. And it's not your original dream. Mm-hmm. And you've had to kind of, rightly so, as you're well articulating. But that's very interesting, very helpful. Royal, thoughts on that?
My input on that is mostly like Elisa said, if you as a couple can be together, that's half the battle or more than half the battle. I know that some spouses struggle on who's accepting, who's not, or this or that. But again, we have been pretty much the same, like the same page all the way through, Elisa said. So that makes it easy. But I think as you said, if parents that may be anticipating, or what do you do, how do you prepare? I think the most important thing to do is to teach your other children, your sibling, their siblings, about love and acceptance of everyone. I don't think you can be, as long as you're teaching good values in the home and we love all people and we accept all people and we accept people of other faith and we accept people of other thinking and then it might help prepare them to, if that ever happens and a child comes out down the road, to say, oh, this person's a little different. It happens to be my brother or sister. Just like Zeke said when he's like, oh, well, Connor's the nicest person I've ever met. I just
that
still love
change.
Him.
That's mm-hmm. it.
And, you know, just like a matter of fact, like almost just like mid-sentence and then on to the next topic.
So you want to go back and play
not
tennis.
Not that that was necessarily what we taught because we didn't. I mean,
well, let's play tennis, what, Dad. What, so what? Yeah, Connor's gay.
Exactly.
Is it changed his tennis game?
Yeah, exactly.
It's about how
no, he's still pretty back. Solid at tennis. But I think that I think that was all, what I would recommend is, you know, have that support group. Again, we've had close family. Our family's all been supportive. All my brothers and family and sister, everyone. And Elisa's family, it's been great to not have anyone push him aside. So it's been a great run.
I may put this picture in the social media, but I've been sharing this picture in my presentations as just a family. And this is a picture. Tell us about this picture, even though our listeners can't see it.
It's a picture of a family picture of their wedding celebration here in Utah. And it's got all of the extended family, grandparents, parents, cousins, siblings, and we are all just there celebrating Connor and Jan's marriage, and there's nothing but love from every person in that picture.
Tell us about so we talked about the shower, then not long after that was the reception. They were married in Germany, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, then we had a reception in Utah. Tell us about the reception and the ward and family support and how that I assume that was a wonderful day for the Richards family.
It was a wonderful day. It was really, they had the official wedding and a big celebration in Germany, and we wanted more of a party here, friends and family, and they selected the venue, and we had some dancing, but most importantly, we just had an opportunity for people in Salt Lake in Utah to greet them and basically just congratulate them and support them. And they felt a lot of love, and they were very, very grateful for that. It was a wonderful evening.
And it was a more of an intimate invitee list, for lack of a better term. It was not the whole ward directory because, you know, there were a lot of people that we didn't invite, not just because we wanted people that are close to Connor, close to our family, mm-hmm. and mostly people that he wanted to have come. Mm-hmm. So a few people heard about it and like wondered why they didn't get invited. And you know, that was not a big issue. The big issue was that there was a lot of love and a lot of support from a lot of friends and family and ward family that were invited that came. And you know, everyone was just happy. We had great food and we had, again, dancing. It was a really nice venue and it was a perfect night. And they really appreciated and loved it and loved the support.
It was a great night when my wife and I walked in there, and my wife is loves Connor, loves you. I think she'd love to be in this podcast with us because she just loves your family and loves your son.
We love her too.
And she is just one, she's awesome. But when we walked in there, we just saw a beautiful family celebration. I did notice our elders quorum president, his wife was there, our bishop and his wife were there, our stake president and his wife were there. And I think, you know, they're recognizing that, you know, keeping the family circle together as you're doing that is consistent with the doctrine of our family. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to be there to support you. So I think it's good for local leaders wondering, should I go to a reception of a, you know, is that crossing a line? I think we're learning that that's not. But we just love and support and honor people. And we don't mm-hmm. just stay, you know, kind of confined to people whose paths are, you know, in the doctrine of, in the circle of our church, but we just walk with everybody, yeah. unless they join ISIS and want to bomb us.
Yeah, yeah.
One more thought.
Well, thought that I want to make sure that I get in this podcast,
good.
And you can't edit it out. Is that we just appreciate so much of what you do and how you have a lot of people in a lot of places, and you're traveling, and I know that you spend countless and countless hours because it's important to you, and talking about this community and how much dialogue there's been and as we follow you and see what you do. We just appreciate an opportunity for us to obviously be here tonight, but for all the things that you do every day. I mean, we're here for an hour tonight and then we go back to our regular days, and I know that you're doing this nonstop, and we love and appreciate you for doing
what you're
doing, because it's very important. And I think there are lots and lots of people who are taking note. and listening to what you're doing.
I think you and Sheila were the first two that we actually told in the ward.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Sheila was the first one, and she was so... I just thought, am I going to be okay? And she was like, you're going to be okay.
Wow.
And it was, I needed that.
Do you
that.
Remember what... Is that what she said?
I just remember her... I literally just remember her, and I just remember having a conversation with her, and I just felt like, it's going to be okay. And part of it was she still loved me. She still...
What a great line. It's going to be okay.
It's going to mm-hmm. be okay. And I have a boss, and I kind of knew, I had thoughts that Connor was going to be gay. And we were in Washington, D.C. once. We were sitting in the World War II Memorial, and we were just kind of sitting there having kind of a nice moment. And he was an older gentleman, and I said, he's about to retire, and I said, a gay couple walked past us, and they were holding hands. I said, wow, I'm not sure what I would do if my son was gay. I'm not sure. And he said, oh, you'd love him just like you love your other boys.
Wow.
And that was probably 3 or 4 years before wow. Connor actually came out. And same thing, you need people that you love to tell you it's going to be okay. And you need to be there to hold their hand and to just kind of share that they still love you no matter what. Same thing that we're doing with our kids.
It's really good. It's really beautiful. Any closing thoughts, Elisa Royal?
No, I think that we need each other, and I kind of feel like in some ways, you know, I think Connor probably was the first gay shower that we might have had in our ward, and I mean, you're pioneering a lot of experiences and you know, safe havens to discuss these sorts of things, and it's just got to keep growing. There's a big need for it, and it's really about just increasing the capacity to love these kids the way God loves them.
Yeah. And you know this, but sometimes people think it's an either or, and I think it's part of our baptism. It's not like a conflict. It is part of our understanding the plan of salvation and the doctrine of Christ and our baptism covenants to extend our circle to everybody. So any other thoughts, Royal, you'd like to share?
Just the same kind of thoughts. I mean, they're wonderful people. I mean, the LGBTQ community, they're wonderful people, and they just are looking for the same thing we are, and that's happiness and love and to be accepted and to, you know, just to raise a family if that's their desire or whatever it is. And we need to love and support them. And I think that, you know, to be a little more open-minded and again, like Elisa said, we've learned to love a little broader circle, a lot broader circle than we maybe originally did. But I think that, and you don't have to have a person that's in that community to have that capacity to love as you do. I don't know sitting here that you have anyone that I'm aware of relative in the community, but yet you love so unconditionally this group of people. And I think that's what a good example you're setting is. That's how we all need to be, is to love them and accept them and then move on and then treat them just like the rest of the people want to be treated.
I love that. And then you can, and then you see the great lives they're having. It's not like they mm-hmm. have second class lives. You know, Connor's, you know, he's working towards a graduate degree. You know, Jan and Connor are going to have a great life together.
He'll be trilingual pretty soon.
Trilingual.
Yeah, so.
And you just look at with the family support, you know, and keeping the emotional, you know, keeping him emotional heavy and feeding the family love and support, the kind of life that he can have and the kind of giving that he can give back to the community because of the man he is and the skills he has. And in some ways, the support he has of a partner to share his life with to be able to then accomplish his life goals. So, you know, what a great kid.
Yep.
So thank you, Royal and Elisa, dear friends, for joining us tonight on another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.